Hello, everyone, and welcome to Weekly Manga Recap. It's February 4th, 2015. I'm Y Ruler of Time, and that's Ruler T. Chris, how's it going?
Nick, you intro'd this week. You were like a soulful jazz musician or something, like, or like a Casey Kasem-esque, like, radio DJ. Like, you just had this smooth voice. Like, I was entranced.
I wish I could do a Casey Kasem, because he has a unique, well, had, rather, a unique delivery.
He lives on our hearts, Nick.
It was weird.
He was. What? He lives on our hearts, Nick.
Oh, yeah. In our terrible Shaggy impressions, I think.
Zoinks!
No!
Wow, those were two god-awful Shaggy impersonations right there. We nailed that.
That's what I say. It's like, I can't do Casey Kasem. Like, anyone can do the oh-ho-ho, like, type of stuff, but you have to have, like, the right inflection and weird wavering and stuff.
I don't know if I've ever tried Casey Kasem.
What's that guy, Matthew Lillard, I think, that does it now? And he just, like, because he played him in live action, and he's just like, okay, you're just Shaggy from now on.
Oh, he's just the voice actor now?
Wow. In everything now.
Good for him. I mean, he looked like fucking Shaggy.
That's the only thing he's really going to be good at. I'm sorry, that's unfair. But that's what he's best at, it seems, is just being the new Shaggy.
I was going to say, I know he's in something else, and I'm trying to think of it, and I'm completely blanking on it.
Yeah, there you go.
I'm quickly trying to get to his IMDb page so I can be like, come on, Nick.
He was in... Fuck.
Nick, don't you remember 13 Ghosts? Oh, Jesus. No, I know this dude was in something else. Hold on, I'm going through his IMDb. I know he's in something else that I know of. Not Criminal Minds. Fat Kid Rules the World. I don't even know what that is. Oh, man. He was in something, though.
It's okay. He's Shaggy.
Is he in 310 to Yuma? Or am I thinking of someone else? I think I'm thinking of Kimi from Lost, who was also in 310 to Yuma and kind of looks a little bit like Matthew Lillard. Anyway, we're wildly off topic and I can already hear... Oh, he was in Scream! That's it! There we go. I knew he was in something.
Oh, yeah, right. He was one of the killers. Spoilers.
Shit, 13-year-old
movie.
Some dude out there is like popping Scream into his DVD player. And he's like, what the...
Weekly Margarita!
Just breaks the disc in half. Like, why bother?
Now I knew Matthew Lillard is psychotic. Shit.
They're like, no, just he's one of the killers. There are more.
There's another one.
Maybe,
Best friend.
They're like, maybe fucking Seth Green turns out to be one of them. Or, what's her name?
The girl,
from Friends.
The guy macking on Monica from Friends is the other one.
Oh. Well, now you really have just finished it all off, Nick.
And then the second one is, let's see, I'm just remembering all...
you're like a Jay and Silent Bob show up at number three, but they don't die.
They don't do anything.
They're just there because, I don't know, it was probably filmed in Jersey.
I think it was because, I think maybe the director knew him or something like that. I don't know.
There was a bag of weed somewhere in the parking lot that Kevin Smith sniffed out.
Just, like, meandering through, like, movie trivia that we semi-know.
Yeah, I was like, not even movie trivia we, like, are sure on. We're, like, kind of like, I think he was in Scream, right? Or am I thinking Kimi again?
There are plenty of movies I've seen way more times than Scream, as in infinitely more, because I've never actually seen it.
I've seen most of Scream, I believe. It used to be, like, one of those movies that would just air all the time. Kind of like Anchorman on Comedy Central, where they were just like, I'll just put this on. We've got 2.5 hours.
Come up with content? No. No one watches our original content.
We need something between a South Park marathon and Dudes Gone Wild commercials. It's going to be time for fucking Anchorman with all the profanities cut out.
We've got nothing before Daily Show. Air movie.
Alright, so we want to jump into actual manga.
Right, next week we're going to be doing an Akame ga Kill, which we started reading this past week. But we don't really have any special topic this week, so we're just going to buying time and hoping that no one would notice, which obviously everyone would have anyway.
I don't think that's an issue, Nick. I think,
I think our audience has enough patience and understands the bi-weekly schedule by this point.
And people also enjoy that, like, you know what, sometimes I get a shorter episode in, or an episode where we get some Q&A. Or in Infamous Planet's case, he's like an episode where you guys don't talk about wrestling for 20 minutes.
Oh, let me tell you all about the... No.
There's a big chat. There was a big issue of Jump this week, though. Very dense. So
yeah, lots of story to get through. So let us just get right into that.
Let's do it by cutting out the least amount of story that happened this week.
Right. We're going to start off nice and simple. Bleach, chapter 613, The Ordinary Peace. This is a very bizarre beginning to this chapter.
This is just a weird chapter in general.
It's a weird chapter, but it's a really weird beginning. Because, you know, at the end of last chapter, you may recall, Ichibe just kind of apologized to Ichigo and his friends. So, you guys cannot defeat Yuhabak. And as they rushed off, and there's like, of course, they don't, you know, hear him or anything. But he continues that thought at the beginning of this chapter by saying, "But do not fear. That is what all peace is like. Isn't that right, Yuhabak?" What? You can't beat him, which is what peace is like. Right guy they are going to try to defeat but won't. That is just a weird line on about three different levels. I don't get it.
Was it supposed to be, like, encouraging them?
Because it was supposed to be comforting?
Spoilers, they meet with Yuhabak at the end of the chapter.
Right.
So if he was trying to dissuade them, they definitely were like, fuck you, Baldy. But if you're trying to encourage them, it just doesn't sound supportive.
Is it he's trying to say, if you can't win, that's when you get peace? Which is, a very pessimistic way of viewing peace, which I think is wonderful. And B, why should that be any comfort if Yuhabak doesn't want peace? Because then he'll just kill them.
Yeah, I didn't get that line.
I don't get it.
I thought, when I first read it, I thought he was trying to, like, make some kind of statement about what Yuhabak's goals were, like, oh, isn't this, you know, like, isn't this the peace you want, Yuhabak, full of fear, or something like that. But
okay,
now,
someone who speaks fluent Japanese, go look at the original version of this, and break down the hidden meanings in the text or something for us. Because there is some weird attempt at poetry going on here that I do not understand.
It'd be great if, like, you get to the actual Japanese and, like, these lines weren't in there at all. It's
poopy poop 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 poop.
It's just Ichibe being like, aren't my eyes pretty? I think they're pretty. Oops, so pretty.
Is this his voice now?
Yes. Was that a voice? I don't even... It was
kind of a voice.
Oh, my.
Oh, yes.
He's the meager grandma. Oh! I don't
Let me pinch your cheeks, Ichigo.
I don't think you can fight, Yuhabak, but if you stay here, I'll knit you a sweater.
That's what all peace is like, right, Yuhabak? What you talking about?
Now, quiet, it's time for my stories. Grandma, that's Jeopardy.
It just turns on Days of Our Lives or some shit. Anyway, so back in Mayuri's base, I guess Urahara's got all the captains, vice captains gathered. Ukitake comes in, and Yumichika, and Ikaku, and Isane, and...
How the fuck do you remember these names? How do you fucking do it?
I've been reading Bleach for 10 years.
It
just builds up.
It baffles me. I mean, I guess in the same way when it comes to One Piece, like, I name-dropped Eyelashes the Camel the other day.
Right.
So I was like, how the fuck do you do it? But I can't even comprehend remembering.
It's
like,
not the fact that I remember them, it's the fact that I rattled them off.
So yeah, like, I'm just like, I don't even remember who. I would have had to stop for like 5 minutes and like, I know the sick guy. He has a name. You something.
I'll tell you this much. I'm
Univision?
I'm blanking on Ukitake's second, third seat, because I know Kiyone, but it's something like Sentaro. Something like that.
Good lord.
Yeah. Anyway.
You're a god, man.
So, basically, so Hirako is like, weren't you injured and needed treatment? And Ukitake is like, I'm fine. And I'm very familiar with, you know, medical treatment because, you know, I'm so sickly all the time. So I can use that information. And also, the actual medical division was there to help us, too. So, yeah. Apparently, Hanataro got promoted at some point, too, because they're calling him the third seat now. So, Anyway.
I thought we did hear something about that early on, but I'm probably horribly mistaken. It was during that time where it was those two random-ass Soul Reaper characters we haven't seen again since.
And where the hell are they?
The balding one, or the balding chick one, and like douchey no-gives-a-fuck other ones. And I don't mean no-gives-a-fuck like that was his personality. I mean, nobody gave a fuck about reading about him.
And then it's just like, these are the new characters, and Ichigo protected them. Bye.
They'll show up at some point. I remember them getting cut back to at some point. At least I think they did. And it wasn't like it was for anything important.
So, anyway, they're like, yay, everyone's healed. But then Zaraki comes in and says, who are you saying is like that I can't be active and stuff? Because Yukitake said that he shouldn't be up and about. But he is anyway. And so he's like, where is Yachiru? And Urahara says, Squad 11 is looking for her. But just wait here. And Zaraki's like, no, I'm going to look for her. And Urahara's like, no, you must stay here. And bars of energy block his path when he tries to go through the door. He's like, what the fuck are you doing? And Urahara says, I can't let you leave, so be patient. And Zaraki's like, fuck you. And then Nanao comes up to him, and she's like, stop this. This isn't the time to do that. So focus on what's in front of you, and let your squad look for her. And Zaraki is like, fine. Well, that was a nice way to burn four pages, wasn't it?
I mean, we could have had, like, a page where it was, like, Bleach, chapter 682, the chapter title, and then everything else is black around it. Wait, didn't we... I think we may have even had that this... Oh, no, that was, like, a last week or something like that, where we had that again, where it was just, like, the chapter title and just black screen around it. Like, alright, I guess, who needs a whole page?
This is definitely preferable to that, because Yachiru is out of commission, and Zaraki would be concerned about her. But it was weird. Jessica was like, I want to go look for Yachiru. No, you can't go look for Yachiru. I want to go look for Yachiru. No, you can't go look for Yachiru. Fine. Like, okay.
Plus, I like Nanao. She's probably, like, my second favorite Bleach character.
Really?
I don't know why. I've gotten a fond affection for her. She gets shit done, I guess. But she doesn't do anything. When she does, I feel like she's fucking capable.
She doesn't tend to jump headlong at somebody and just get her ass kicked. So... So, Urahara is like, here, take these orbs and stand inside the circle and charge the orbs with your spiritual pressure. And I'm going to open the ceiling, and it's raining, so you're going to get wet. And then the scene changes.
And then we cut back.
So Jiobak has just stabbed the Soul King through the chest, and he looks over his shoulder, and Ichigo and his friends are there, and he says... Ichigo, the pitiful gnat who will be crushed on the cogs of fate. Let me at least lay to rest by my own hands. And that's the end of the chapter.
This is such a weird chapter, because it starts off with this weird quasi, I guess, encouragement for them to go face Yuobak.
You're going to get your ass kicked, but it's okay. Go face him anyway.
That's what peace is, or something like that. And then we cut to this scene in, you know, the office where they're just like, all right, we're going to hand you orbs, charge them up. Then we cut away again to them facing down. You have, like, it's just such a weird structure to it. Like, it's almost as if you should have cut out the middle piece and made it its own chapter, or just cut out the very end here where they face, like, they meet Yuobak and just, like, actually show what these guys are doing with the spirit orbs or whatever. Like, it's just a weirdly structured chapter.
I'm 80% sure that in Kubo's head this all makes some sort of sense, but the other 20% of me just thinks that this is the equivalent of the episode has to last 43 minutes, but I've only got 30 minutes of content, so I'm just going to have characters talk about nothing for 10 minutes instead of using that time to do extra stuff like character development. I'm just going to have them talk about one thing in a circle and wait for time to pass until I can hit the next plot point. That's just what it feels like to me.
Which is so weird, because isn't this ending? Like, aren't you at the point where you're like, now every moment's vital, let's get to this, rather than be like, let's beat around the bush for another year and a half.
Yeah.
I mean, I guess it's another year and a half of getting paid. Considering no matter how often your series is in the bottom five of the rankings, it doesn't matter because you won't get canceled.
Maybe that's it. Maybe Kubo is just like, I'm going to make this last as long as I can, so the checks keep coming in.
Or he's just like, I want to see how bad I can make it and still be, like, still outlast E-Robot. Because fuck them. Like, he takes joy in every time a series gets canceled. He's like, my series was worse than yours, but they can't get rid of me.
He, like, makes a notch on his belt every time a series gets canceled before Bleach.
I made Byakuya and Hitsugaya. You can't get rid of me.
Maybe he's like, I'm going to make this last more than 700 chapters just so I can beat Naruto.
The 701 chapter. And then it just abruptly ends. Like, it's midway between, like, Renji and the fucking X-axis, and it just abruptly cuts and ends. Chapter 701, just Ichigo stabbing every main villain, like, Aizen through the heart. And he's just like, I did it! Chapter end. Everyone's like, what happened?
Or it's gonna be, like, some character, like, makes a speech that makes no sense while talking to nobody who's actually present, and they say something that sounds somewhat ominous but doesn't actually make any sense, and then in the corner it just says, wish Kubo luck on his next series.
It'd be great. It's fucking Khan, like, retroactively ending the series. Like, it's him, like, talking about what life's like now, and, like, everyone's just, like, doing random bullshit. He's just like, Chad got a job as a hairdresser, just like we all knew he always would. And Ichigo's a defense attorney. Can you believe that? Like, what the fuck? They pulled a Cody from Digimon Season 2!
Cody's made sense.
Who's, what is it, Sora and Matt?
Matt became an astronaut.
He was a rock star astronaut, Nick. It made sense.
He was not holding a guitar in that picture. He was not still a rock star. Don't lie to me.
Can't play music in space. Nick, there's no sound. He just rocks it when he comes back to Earth.
Give the guitar its own astronaut suit. Oh, man.
Alright, do I move on?
Yeah, let's do that before we go into Digimon references.
So, Fairy Tale, chapter. I don't see a chapter number anywhere here. Just
418.
Oops. 418 time skip.
Whatever the time is.
Time skip Magoo. We open with...
Lucy's boobs is the chapter, okay?
We open with Lucy taking a shower, and then a shot of Lucy's butt as she puts on her skirt, and then a shot of Lucy as she puts on lipstick, and then a shot of Lucy as she ties her bow, because there are hair fetishes out there. She doesn't! It's the same fucking haircut!
No, it's a different haircut. The ponytail's on a different side, and it's longer.
I mean, that, to be fair, that was what Sanji did for his time skip. And it wouldn't be like this is the only costume choice that strongly resembles a One Piece character's time skip uniform, so...
Well, and Lucy goes through design changes all the fucking time.
Yeah, to be fair. I mean, one week she's a bikini person, the other week she's naked.
She goes through multiple design changes in flashbacks in this one chapter.
Yeah, okay, she goes through a lot in this one. So anyway, it's Lucy, and she starts the day by screaming out, time to get out there and seize the day. And we are now a year basically into the future. We have time skipped forward 1 year, and we are in the capital of Crocus, and the Grand Magic Festival is happening again. But nobody we know is participating, and, you know, it's two people we haven't heard of. They're fighting against each other.
Because there's no fairy tale.
Yeah, that makes sense. And Lucy shows up to her editor, her boss, basically, who's, I don't know, he has, like, some antenna that flops when things are cool. And
he's got, like, almost an alfalfa kind of...
Like a cowlick.
Spike. Yeah. A big old cowlick, and it wiggles when he's excited.
Yes, and Lucy shows up saying, sorry I'm late, and we find out that she works for the Grand May... Whatever the fuck the magazine title is. It's somewhere in this, and I completely forgot. Because she notes that I figured I should go out my way to after... Oh, hey, hold on, no. I skipped over something that I just need to address. Because this is, like, my biggest problem with this chapter. I almost just glanced over it. She's narrating that she's now an editor-in-training at Weekly Sorcerer. That's the name of the magazine. Right. And she's explaining what happened this time skip. She's
How
like,
did she get this job?
First, Natsu and Happy just up and left. And then the very next day, the guild was disbanded because everyone else was just, I guess it's done. That no one else decided to stick around. I couldn't handle it all, so I got kind of depressed for a while. but the others started finding their own paths. I didn't expect them to be so upbeat about venturing out on their own, so I figured I should go my own way too. Not that we'll show you this, mind you. Not that we'll show you Lucy and her struggles with depression.
Oh yeah,
and
Lucy
overcoming them.
Like,
getting
Jesus.
Character development, showing how she overcame this. But we will let you know, before she became an editor, she had a brief career as an underwear pinup model for the magazine.
Like, she narrates the whole thing, but the only part of the where the flashback actually begins is when she is a graveyard model.
Yes.
Because any excuse to have Lucy lingerie, basically.
Yeah, and that was essentially her way of getting into Weekly Sorcerer.
It's like a PG version of a casting couch, which is really creepy.
It's so weird. Like, it was just like, I wanted to become an editor. So I decided to become an underwear model first, and then work my way. Like, it just seems like those are two divisions that wouldn't really have crossover. But
I assume what happened was, because she was no longer part of the guild, she wasn't getting missions from them, so she needed to, like, pay the bills somehow. So this guy was like, oh, you know, you could be a model. She was like, okay, I need money. And then she was like, wait, you work for a magazine. Let me write for you. It's like, that makes a certain degree of sense. But the way that she talks about it is like, no, this was my plan all along.
Yeah.
It's weird. Like, so the guy gave her a job, but why didn't you just immediately open with, can I be a writer for you? As opposed to, she spends some time as a model and he's like, oh, you're so great. And she's like, can I be a writer? I was just talking about how much money I'm making on you being my model, and now you want to be a writer. Yes, you can do that. Yes, that's fine.
This seems like a really roundabout way to do it, but okay.
It's weird.
And then we cut away to outside of the studio. She's talking to her boss, and he's like, oh, okay, well, let's work on the article, but man, you know, it's so hard to get excited about these year's games, huh? Because there's no Sabretooth, or Lamia Scale, or Mermaid Heel, or Blue Pegasus, or Quattro Cerberus.
Where did they all go?
And then, you know, he finishes it by being like, and no Fairy Tale. But I'm like, why did every other guild apparently disband? What the fuck could Quattro Cerberus, which, by the way, they're the Quattro Puppies, so they should be calling them by that name. Why the fuck aren't they there? Like, what vow of silence have they decided to follow? Like, Fairy Tale's not going to be there? Mm-mm, we're not going to be there either. Fucking stand at Song Brotherhood.
Okay, you know, Sabretooth, Blue Pegasus, Mermaid Heel, all of them have at least one person with a bond from someone from Fairy Tail. Quattro Cerberus' bond with Fairy Tail was Bacchus wanted to rape Lysana and Mira Jane. Like, the unity shown here.
I'm trying to remember if there was anybody, like, who was in Lamia Scale? Or no, that's, is that, fuck, what's his name? Jura's Guild? Is that?
I couldn't tell you.
Ah, fuck. I forget. I remember during the Oration 6 arc, there were the three guilds they introduced. One was Wendy's bullshit guild, where everybody was ghosts or some stupid. Then there was Blue Pegasus, and then there was the other one that Jura was a part of. I feel like that was Lamia Scale, that Leon's also in, and the chick that Mira Jane fought, and man, stupid stuff. Anyway, I don't get why none of them are here. It's like this weird point, like, none of the guilds are here. Because Fairy Tail broke up, I guess? I don't know.
Mermaid Heel is the one with Kagura.
I thought Mermaid, yeah, Mermaid Heel was the one that had that sorceress girl. Yeah. I think Lemia Scale was the one with Sheila and Leon and okay. Jura and all that. But yeah.
It's not really important anyway.
Again, it's characters who, I mean, even though they have a vague connection to characters in Fairy Tail, you're still like, why aren't they here? Like, I don't get it. Did they all quit as well? Whatever. So, you know, Lucy, of course, remarks, like, oh, well, you know, they don't exist anymore. And, you know, our boss is like, then why do you have that mark on your hand?
Because tattoo removal is expensive. Okay? Yeah. Fuck you.
So Lucy's back in her house, and she notes that, you know, in this whole year, she hasn't been able to contact any of them. And she's like, and I'm pretty busy, but maybe that's just an excuse. You know, I don't want to interrupt their new lives. As, of course, she takes off her clothes and has another bathing scene because it's been
a depressed, sad bathing scene.
It's been about 10 pages since we've seen Lucy fully naked. Granted, only 3 since we've seen her in her underwear, but still, that's a long time to go. And, you know, she has this big huffy fit about how she misses everybody, and that's the whole reason why she became a reporter, because everyone's so scattered that this is her way of keeping up with them and, you know, making sure she could follow any rumors about where they were. And for some reason, I don't know why, Crunchyroll fucked up the layout of their chapter this week. So there are two-page spreads in this chapter, but they're, like, broken in half. Like, so they're awkwardly put. Like, it's kind of weird.
So you get the bit where it's like, you know, I have been searching for everyone, and there's huge map.
This huge map of everything, and you get half.
I haven't heard about Natsu, though. Turn page.
Yeah, turn page.
So that I can get us all together again.
Exactly.
I've been looking for everyone. Turn page. So I get us all together.
And, you know, it's kind of cool. You know, you can see this big map where you see all the different guild members, and she has, like, brief little notes and newspaper clippings about who they are. Like, even obscure characters like Drow and Jed. I think you can see the two cowboy characters who have names, but no one's going to remember them.
It's Biska and the guy Biska married or some shit?
If Biska's one of the names, Nick, I'd be flabbergasted that you remembered it.
I know her as the girl in Fairy Tale with the cowboy hat.
That's the only way I know them. They're the cowboy couple. There were two cowboy characters in the guild. They happened to be of opposite gender. Because they existed separately before it. They got together after the Grand Magic Festival when she was suddenly a character.
Right.
Or not the Grand Magic Festival, the Fighting Festival, whatever the fuck they called it, where Luxus froze everybody. And then
one of the few things that of actual consequence that happened.
That no one gave a fuck.
We had a kid.
Yeah.
This was the only thing that could have happened, or rather could not have happened without a time skip happening. Like, all the other stuff that came from that.
They were just like, hey, Jet got really out of shape. You didn't need to skip 7 years for that, or whatever.
Two more Dragon Slayers were discovered. But that could have happened without a time skip.
It's kind of cool, though, just seeing all the little different clips. Like, you can see where different characters are. Like, as you see up there, Urza, you can see she's being advertised to face Rusev at Fastlane this weekend. So, I thought that was pretty cool. But,
there's no prompting for that.
She knows that if we, you know, even if the, what's the point? Because even if she's doing this, you know, Fairy Tail doesn't exist anymore. And of course she's doing that in a towel, you know, tastefully having her feet cover up her naughty bits as she, you know, sits down. It's sort of this weird, like, story point where it's like, Lucy is this determined caretaker of the guild right now. She wants to remain the one person keeping in touch with all these connections. Even if she can't stay in contact with them, she wants to follow along with it. But she's also horribly depressed about it as well, it seems. Like, she's constantly doubting herself. So it's sort of weird. We got one chapter last week to show what Natsu was doing during the time skip, and it was this, you know, kind of cute, silent chapter showing Natsu determined to get stronger. And then we get this chapter this week where Lucy's like, I've been following all my ex-guildmates, not really doing anything for myself, and I'm really, really sad all the time.
Well, honestly, this is, like, the actual first, like, post-time-skip chapter. And honestly, the way that Fairy Tail is usually paced, I was expecting this chapter to happen last week. And then after last week's chapter was so very different, I was expecting more stuff like that.
Yeah, I was like,
to get a few mini stories and follow different characters, or maybe even just follow Natsu as he, you know, has a few little discoveries and mini adventures with Happy and stuff. But then it's just like, the time skip's over now, and we're going to get the guild back together.
Now, to be fair, we're not even done the chapter yet, and, you know, there's still a lot to find out from what the consequences, as if there's going to be any, from this time skip will happen. But one thing that I found so strange in this entire chapter is supposed to be about Lucy. What Lucy's been doing in this year. What she's been doing to try to maintain this hope that Fairy Tail can get back together. And in this entire chapter, she hasn't shown any signs that she herself has applied herself in any ways to get stronger individually. She's just been following after Fairy Tail, which is fine. You know, she loves everybody, all that shit. But I was so baffled that at no point is there any reference to Aquarius.
Yeah.
Like, there's no reference to if she's trying to get that key fixed. Is she still a stellar spirit mage? Like, is there any of that intrigue in her or anything? But, nah, there's nothing really about that.
I mean, it's bad that, you know, the guild's broken up and stuff, but Aquarius was her, you know, mother figure, and there is not, the thing preventing them from getting back together is not, we'll just meet up again eventually. It's, I lost the thing that I make an arcane contract with and can't, see her ever again, and, it's more of consequence. It's a more permanent thing. Mm-hmm. And, yeah, she never mentions...
Because it was we saw it prior to the time skip. Like, they had right. that shot where you saw the broken key, and I was like, oh, that should be, like, a thing. And, again, it still could be. It was just weird that in this chapter that's an extra long, 33 pages long, you know, 8 of them is fucking Lucy in a fucking bathing scene, but, like, this extra long chapter doesn't even come up once. It's just sort of strange. But anyway...
If there had just even been, like, a single shot where you see, the like, key, she's something. Kept, like... Well, if she, like, kept the shards of the key or something, you just got, like, a shot of that, like she held on to them or something.
Yeah, something like that. But anyways, we continue our story. She goes back out for the next, I guess it's the finals of the tournament. There's two people, and I'm not going to bother mentioning their names because it's supposed to basically be, like, a big fucking joke encounter anyway. Like,
right.
One of the guys is even taking a dive, I think, during it.
Yeah, I like Lucy. This is probably my favorite part of the chapter, though, is Lucy's just, like, analyzed them and just, like, no, they've been holding back so that they'll get, like, a bigger payoff from gambling on themselves.
Yeah, it's been a whole crock. This entire right. Magic tournament's been a big pile of bullshit, which is, you know, hey, good eye on you, Lucy. But, so this, you know, fucking Schmarmaglone wins. And everyone's like, hey, we have the winner, when all of a sudden a cloaked figure shows up. And Lucy gets, you know, she senses something. She's like, some kind of intruder. I know this feeling. And she screams, that's serious magic power. Everyone evacuate the stadium now. And suddenly this intense heat radiates throughout the stadium. And the walls start to burn. And the figure says, you guys are the top gilded fury. I'm the challenger. And, you know, with the fires start to... They burn clothes. Which sounds terrifying. In this case, all it's doing is, hey, look, Lucy's boobs. But in my mind, I hear, like, my clothes are melting, and my mind is like, oh my god, aren't those, like, wouldn't everybody be getting vicious third-degree burns all over their skin from the clothes that are melting off of their... Like, the walls are melting! Like, but
it's easier to, you know, destroy clothing than it is to melt flesh. But the heat required to burn the clothes off your body... would still fucking hurt.
It's almost like, I almost think these are like the most amusing pieces of fan service though. Like, any like reason you try to go to explain why girls' clothes just eat away is one of my favorite things. I'm like, I feel bad. I don't want to mention this because I know Infamous Planet's going to fucking hate me. But if you ever remember the show Full Metal Panic, and I'm doing it anyway, so go fuck yourself, I guess. There was an episode where like, a fucking clothes-eating bacteria got released into the school. It was like this military mech series, but the one fan service episode, some, like, virus got released that just ate clothes. It was like, I love this stuff. Like, the nonsensical bullshit you'll put out to get girls in their underwear.
Well, and there was a weird, like, thing that just happened, like, all throughout Negima, which was, instead of, like, having blood and gore and stuff, damage to characters would be, like, symbolized through their clothing getting damaged.
Oh, yeah. That's great. So, obviously this heat is coming from only one person, and in the next two-page spread, which is still fucked up on Crunchyroll's screen, we see our hero has returned. Of course, he looks very similar to himself prior to the time skip. His hair is just a little bit more wild, and he has an X-shaped scar across his chest. And we see Luffy... I'm sorry, Natsu. Natsu! I definitely meant to say Natsu.
I didn't even notice the X-shaped scar before.
I know it's nitpicking, but it's so hard not... Like, I just feel like if there was...
He shows up post-time skip, and he's got an X-shaped scar on his chest.
There was
yeah.
one change Luffy made post-time skip. It was an X-shaped scar on the chest. If there was one fucking thing... that in your series, which constantly is being criticized as being too similar or ripping off One Piece, that you would not do on your main character after your bullshit time skip, would be to add an X-shaped scar on their chest. Why would you do that?
Also, apparently, like, Natsu's just kept the same pair of pants for the entire past year.
He patches it up with steel.
Patched it with metal and rivets.
He's just like, I don't know how to fix pants, so I bolted them together. Oh my god.
Who's there?
Again, I know it's nitpicking, but I feel like at some point someone should have just been like, hey, Hiro, you know that one thing Luffy did? Why don't you just not do that with your new post-time skip design? Anyway, why am I saying anyway? Nothing else happens in this chapter. Right. Lucy holds up her bare tits because her clothes have been burned off somehow, and Natsu shows up and he's like, I'm all fired up, and the stadium's literally melting.
All of them should be dead
now. Yeah, like, you're just like, good, wait, is this dude like a fucking, like, walking sun now? It's terrifying.
Yeah, like, melting clothes. It's like, you'll get burned. Melting the building? They are all dead.
I'm looking at this next page now, and I'm seeing Natsu with the longer hair, and I'm like, what's the over-under on cancer showing up next chapter to cut his hair?
Well, at least it looks, he looks like he needs a haircut.
That'd be great. They changed two things in that Natsu post-time skip. They gave Luffy scar and longer hair.
Look, and then the page also shows up and heals the scar on his chest, too.
Next chapter, they cut his hair back.
Someone comes in, repairs his clothes, and they just look like the exact same set of clothes he had before.
Oh my god, I'm praying for this to happen. I think I'd lose my shit. But Natsu says, like, hey, it's been a while. And Lucy's like, just then a voice inside my head says that fairy tale does still exist.
Well, of course it fucking does. They didn't all die.
Yeah, it's not like everyone. I'm shocked there's not, like, one dude who was just like, you know, I understand fairy tale's broken up. I'm still gonna hang out in this city. Like, I don't have some grand personal quest I needed to go on or anything. Like, yeah, look, where are the cowboys?
Let's go back to some of those minor characters. So, the cowboy couple with the kid, are they just gonna go off on their own journey too? Shouldn't they have, like, moved in somewhere permanently?
They shouldn't be raising their kid? It looks like he's, like, getting old enough to go to school or whatever. Come on.
Pretty sure their kid's a girl, but whatever.
Oh, I'm thinking of Makarov. Not Makarov. Fuck, what's the stupid purple flame guy? God damn it! He's the guy from the first thing in the series. Fuck! The first arc, fucking purple dude. His name starts with an M, I'm positive. He had a kid. He's trying to emulate Natsu.
God, oh, right.
That guy. Like, right. That, I was thinking of that kid.
Romeo.
I don't think right. That... Maybe that was the kid's name.
Yeah, that's the kid's name.
I'm about to look...
Marco.
Was it Marco? Fairy
something like
tale,
Marco or Mario or something along those lines.
Mark? There is a fairy tale Mark. No, that's the Mark of fairy tale. Hold on, I'm going to type in fairy tale.
Romeo Conbolt.
Bullshit characters. Wow, that's
so... Macau Conbolt.
What most amusing is that as I start typing in fairy
tale, Conbolt.
As I start typing in fairy tale obscure bullshit characters, it auto-completed. Anyway, that guy and his stupid kid.
So, this chapter was allegedly supposed to be about Lucy, right?
Yes.
The only way I can see this, like, ending and having any consequence is if she actually does play an important role in finding the members of Fairy Tail and actually bringing them back together. Like, if this proves to be of no consequence and Makarov is just like, what, you think I broke up the guild and didn't, like, get everyone's phone number so I could call them to a beforehand arranged meeting place?
It'd be great.
Which, considering the type of leader Makarov is, of course he didn't fucking do that.
It'd be great next week. He's like, didn't you see the picture of me in the paper where I had 1 year crossed out on my arm and told everybody to meet up again?
So, yeah, I mean, I'm just saying, this whole chapter dedicated to Lucy, where she says, I didn't do anything except keep tabs on anybody. There better be a goddamn consequence to her doing nothing but keeping tabs on everybody.
Yes.
Because that's just such a slap in the face if she just does nothing during this entire year that everyone else is doing something.
Especially when it's in a sense of, like, there's clearly been a story. Like, I would love to see Lucy's character development in this moment where she's battling depression and the loneliness and abandonment of being the only member of Fairy Tail that seems to have stayed put. Like, that would have been worth exploring, but it's not happy enough, I guess, or whatever, to,
it's
I guess,
not dig fairy into. Tale.
Yeah, it's just not Fairy Tail style.
Like, she got a bit sad, but she continued to believe in Fairy Tail, so she wasn't horribly sad. See?
Yeah.
Yeah, it was kind of a weird jump from last week into this one, but we're back from the time skip now after that break of no time whatsoever.
It was such a weird time skip. Like, you think back to, like, when One Piece had its big time skip. Like, One Piece was off for, like, 3 weeks or, like, a month or something like that, and it ended with Nat and Luffy putting that hat down, and the chapter we come back is, like, picking up right back from that. Like, Luffy picks up the hat, and we see everyone 2 years later. Fairy Tail does its time skip. The chapter ends, like, everyone's broken, and we get this one chapter of Natsu, you know, in the meantime, and then the exact next week, time skips over. Like, what? I was like, alright, this kind of doesn't feel as big of a deal as maybe I think it should be, but alright, let's go with this. Natsu grew his hair out. Fascinating.
Yeah.
Alright, enough Fairy Tail. Let's move on.
Okay, Food Wars, Shokugeki no Soma, Chapter 104, New Diamonds. Diamonds is in very heavy quotes. So, yeah.
No, like, so we want to make sure you didn't think literal diamonds, figurative diamonds.
Right. So, last chapter, Hayama was declared the winner, and so he is going to be part of the Elite Council of Ten. This chapter opens up with him still holding his fist up in victory. Kurokiba looks all snarly and angry about it. Soma is looking kind of sad and thoughtful, and June comes up to Hayama, and she's like, oh, congratulations, and she's crying, and she's taking her glasses off to wipe away her tears, like, you did it, she's crying so hard, she's hiccuping, and she says, come on, you don't need to be so cool and stoic all the time, come on, be happy, and jump around, you won, and he gives her a big ol' hug, and her boobs get all squished, because Shokugeki no Soma, and she starts blushing in embarrassment, she's like, What has gotten into you? And her glasses magically reappear on her face. Or her hand is also blurring. Does that mean she put them on really quickly? So Hayama kind of realizes what he's just done. He's like, oh, never mind. And so people in the audience are like, wow, you don't see him lose his cool that often. And Yoshino from the Polar Star dorm, her eyes are glinting, and there's a little narration that says, Yoshino didn't miss the hint of romance in the air. And I'm like, she's twice his goddamn age. She's as old as Soma's dad.
What was she supposed to... I mean, again, I still have a lot of the series to catch up on, like, but that brief flashback almost made it seem like she was a mother figure to him.
Or at least an older sister figure.
Yeah. But to be completely fair, I mean, that's the impression this girl is getting. You could very easily read this as a son being grateful to a parent who's always supported him. Like, it's not like it's like a romantic hug necessarily. It could just be a son who's completely happy and embraces his, you know, sensei, his teacher.
Yeah, this is just kind of another one of those examples of occasionally in manga, just some of those weird romances just kind of pop up where you would expect, if not the age difference, then the, you know, pre-existing relationship would not lead to a romance. Like, there are a fair number of stories where, like, a teacher hooks up with a student despite the fact that it's, like, you know, high school at max, you know, age versus high school teacher. And it's just kind of weird. And that's more common than you would think it would be because of the weirdness that, like, I would find in that relationship, mm-hmm. basically. But yeah, I mean, Hayama has this whole flashback where, you know, he thinks to himself, you know, it's like, you know, all this stuff that I did, you know, I was doing it for June's sake, you know, thinking I had to win so that I could continue to stay by her side. And Dojima thinks, ah, that expression on his face during the semifinals, it wasn't a smile of supreme confidence, it was a smile that said that he was going to climb to the top and not allow anyone to get close. It was a knife-edge grin meant to hype himself up, and a desperate attempt to intimidate. So, yeah.
This is kind of poetic.
Yeah. Well, alas, the Fensuke Kingdom is poetic. Basically, you know, this and the last chapter are showing you thought that Hayabusa was this, you know, cool, holier-than-thou type of guy who just looked down on everybody and was just a flat-out villain. This is the truth behind his persona. He's this guy who had this deep connection to this person and was just as dedicated to her as, you know, some is to the people around him and, you know, like the relationship that Kurokiba and Alice have and so on and so forth. He is a human being.
Yeah, I mean, based off of what I've read of this series thus far, I'm like, he's a cool dude, that Hayama. What a cool bro.
You didn't see the other matches that he had where he
the one where, like, he threw a dude's hand at a fucking vat of oil or something like that?
Well, no, but where he was...
got someone's parents in a car accident so they wouldn't compete, and you're like, oh, wow, this dude's kind of cool. You know,
between the preliminary round and the quarterfinals and the semifinals and stuff, he was built as being a much more, you know, cool and confident type of person.
Ah.
One of those kind of untouchable figures and easily the tournament favorite, basically, once they reach the preliminary rounds. So, I mean, it's basically like we're taking a step back and saying, this is the real way that this character is, essentially. Other stuff that happens... Alice,
Nick, can I voice Alice?
Go ahead.
How dare you! How dare you! How dare you! Like, how dare you lose when I'm watching? And how dare you take that tone with me? Like, whatever!
I didn't know why you did that, but okay.
This is my surfer dude.
That's your surfer dude?
Like, how dare you lose when I'm watching? Whoa! What sweet ways, brother!
You're getting a bit close to Hulk Hogan there.
See you at the Silver Dome.
A Silver Dome, brother. So, Alice is just upset with Kurokiba for losing, and she's like, I'm like never talking to you again. I'll be waiting for your apology. And he's just like, big power aura appearing around him while he, like, makes a crapping his pants pose and stuff. Oh, God. Dojima, like, compliments Ayama, but he says, keep in mind that a talent such as yours will eventually turn on itself. I hope that you will be able to handle it well. And I was like, what the fuck's he talking about?
He's like, are you saying this cinnamon's gonna kill me? Not if I kill it first!
Om nom nom. Oh god! Oh god, it burns! Too much cinnamon burns! I was like, well, self-fulfilling prophecy.
Good job.
Okay, so that's actually happened. So someone comes up to Hayama and is like, say, that carpaccio you just won with, can you make more of it? Oh yeah, make it for me. Why? Make it for me. And Kurokiba demands the same thing, and it's like, come on, I want to taste it, basically, so that I can, you know, taste what beat me. And so they chow down on it after he makes it, and Kurokiba's like, I could have made this and better. I'm still eating it. So basically they're like, wow, this actually was really good, but they're not actually saying that because they're super competitive and so on. So, someone says, you know, this isn't half bad. And Hayama says, oh, yeah, you actually so great, Mr. Third Place Loser. And someone's like, you don't know I came in third? Come on. Well, he doesn't say it like that, but he says it all super serious. And there's a narration that says, very serious, so you know he's super serious.
Yeah.
And Kurokiba gets all angry while he's still stuffing his face with the food, so... And Dojima is, like, observing them from afar. And he says, those three could become quite the interesting trio.
Then this really weird scene happens.
Is Alice breastfeeding?
I didn't get to, like... It would be nice if they showed an established, like, scene to why this was happening. I guess maybe she's moping because Kurokiba was... Yeah, like, I guess that's what she's doing. But it is weird, because her back's to the screen, you see her on her knees, and she's, like, on her mom, like, her chest is on her mom's lap. And it's just...
stuffing her face right in her chest.
Yeah, it's just such a weird shot.
It's not, you know, designed to look, you know, evocative, or provocative, rather, I should say, or it's not titillating or anything like that. It is literally just their positions are just kind of weird, because she's on her knees... and slumped against Leonora's chest while Leonora is going back to her broken English and saying, the rough diamonds bonk against each other, making all shinier. Yes. That is correct.
I like the way Bambino put it better. Thank you.
Bump around and so that you can right.
Something like that. I'm sure fucking Infamous Planet has it on story
okay,
file.
It's okay, bounce around and you know get smooth and shiny. And yeah, stuff, something along those lines. So yeah, the headmaster says tonight in this arena a new diamond was born, and we get a little statistics message across the next couple of pages that says like the 92nd graduating class featuring the 43rd annual Fall Classic Culinary Tournament. And these were the preliminaries, these were the blocks, these were the quarterfinals, these were the runners-up, and the winner was Akira Hayama. And it closes with Hayama receiving a medal flanked by Kurokiba and Soma, and Kurokiba's just holding his medal in his hand, and Soma is like, oh, let me see your medal, Hayama.
It is kind of cool, like, he's just like, they're posing, and Soma's like, oh, yours is cool.
And Kurokiba's like, I don't want this one, I want to be the one who won.
Crumple, crumple.
So, that's done. Everybody exits the arena and goes off their own separate ways. Soma gets a call from his dad, so he heads off on his own to take it. And so, his father says, so, how'd the classic go? Well, you lost. God damn it. It was kind of easy to tell that, wasn't it? So, he correctly predicts which of them won, and he's like, oh, come on, tell me what happened. This makes it look like I lost to, Shiomi, because you lost to her apprentice, and he's just giving him all sorts of shit. But eventually Soma says, what he put on that plate, it had the taste of pure determination. And he says, by the way, Dad, I'm glad that I left home, and if I hadn't, there's so much stuff that I would have never noticed, and from here on out, I'm going to try to discover what it is that only I can bring to the table. Find my own cooking, because if I don't, there's no real point to me being the one to inherit Yukihira someday. And then he says, I guess that's what I was already doing. But then his father says, no, actually, I think that it sounded pretty good that you said that. So, yeah, that's fine. While he's yawning, because he's on the other side of the globe. Presumably. So Buddy says, like, it looks like Soma, as he hangs up, he says, it looks like Soma's found somebody his own age who can knock him on his butt. That's it, Soma. It's finding people. It's only through finding and meeting the right people that a chef can truly grow. And a bunch of Soma's rivals, appear behind him as he's walking and stuff. But before the chapter ends, the speech continues, if all you do is stare at your own plates all day long, the only thing that will look back at you is your own unchanging reflection, as Arina stares down at Soma from a window and then walks away.
This is what? Go ahead.
Arina has to grow. Duh!
This is a really, really good series. Like, I've kind of, just getting back into the swing of things, still got a lot to catch up on, but this chapter, I don't know why, it just struck me in a very strong way. Something about, I guess, all the poetry of it, which, I mean, as you said, it's how the series works. Otherwise, it would be like, this food tastes good! But, there's something just about the way it was structured and handled. I like that, the chapter kind of gave a focus to Hayama and is kind of establishing him to not be this gigantic asshole like everyone just assumed he was, and kind of hinting at this idea that these guys are, rivals to one another, and they're going to be the ones who are going to be kind of pushing each other forward, because, that's always a fun element in a shonen series when you get like that. These three rivals are, they fight with each other, but ultimately it's their desire to beat one another that will allow them to grow the furthest. And I like the phone call he has with his dad. It's just, I don't know. There's just good, really good elements to it.
I'm actually really excited by the prospect of Arina, becoming more important because, from a very early point in the series, it looked like she was going to be, this very important figure. And then, since that point, she's interacted with Soma maybe a couple of times, and she has just been portrayed as this, untouchable queen that doesn't have to get involved with the other characters and stuff. She's sort of, got this final boss vibe about her, I guess. But the way that she actually relates to the other characters doesn't really mesh up with that. She's not, this true antagonistic force, necessarily. So I do like the idea that maybe she'll become more proactive and show up more and get some more development.
Yeah, really good chapter this week.
Yeah, good conclusion to this arc. And And I like, you know, that we got this really big climax, but also it's like, and we're still just getting started kind of feeling about it. Mm-hmm. Okay. What is next?
Gakyo Hotei!
Gakyo Hotei. If I can actually get to that page.
Dogs and cocaine, Nick.
Dogs and cocaine! So, we get a recap of the case to this point. The magical happy snack and the magical powder that goes into making it, which is totally not drugs. Definitely not drugs. It's just an addictive white substance that, you know, you have withdrawal symptoms if you don't take it. Right. But last chapter closed with a tremendous development in the case, as Pine was looking into the warehouse where allegedly some of the deals went down. She came across Shiratori. I almost said something else. Yeah, whatever. It's Shiratori, the Madonna of the class, and so now she is the primary suspect in the case. So we catch up with her at her house, where she is in her giant fucking mansion, crying while dogs surrounding her look sad.
Fucking a lot of dogs too. There's like 8 dogs in that panel. Well, there's the overhead shot shows them kind of. You can see there's like
3, 4, 5, 6, 7. Yeah, it is 8. Hmm. Fuck. I wanted to correct you and be an asshole.
Spot on. Good job, me.
Oh, excuse me, Chris. There are 8.
Oh, wait. That stuffed animal's a dog. 9, if you count the stuffed animal.
I'm counting the inanimate one, too.
I'm counting the ones from the previous page.
What, aren't those the same ones? Fuck off.
Suck my nuts.
So, then we cut over to Tenzo and the others, who are looking for witnesses, and Tenzo's just got, like, this tremendous stack of wanted and seeking info brochures, and he's just, like, picking them up and scattering them to the wind. It's not even, like, handing them to people. It's the people just pushing past him. It's like, don't you know anything about the mask, dude? Tell us stuff about the mask, dude. It's like, get the fuck out of the way, you weird loser in your stupid hair.
Your stupid ladybug hair. What are those?
And they specifically call him, like, Toadstool Head. And he's like, oh, everyone's bullying me and I'm picking up my stuff. And Pine gets all pissed off and she's like, come be a witness! And she's all cute and everyone's like, oh, give me 5 copies of that brochure, give me 10 copies of that. She's not having nude photos on the other side, idiots! You only need 1! God, so...
Well, why would you need 5 copies of her nude photos any... Oh, no. Forget I asked that question.
You're in the prime of youth, Chris. Full of puberty.
Young, dumb, and full of cum.
So, Abaku kind of says, like, why? You're the prosecution. Why are you helping us? We're going to be opponents in this case. And Pine says, Miss Shiratori is my precious friend. And so Abaku says, well, why did you indict her in that case? And she said, it would have gone against, you know, my pride as a prosecutor. You know, there's no way that I could have not done it. You know, my name would have been tarnished if I hadn't obtained a warrant and so on and so forth. And, you know, she says, it also, she has been acting really suspiciously, and there's no way to save her except by proving her innocence using eyewitness accounts, because she hasn't been willing to talk to me and not answer my questions. So she kind of drags off Tenzo and says, let's go do round 2 and hand out more brochures and get more information. And Nabucco says, I'm going to go somewhere else and figure this out, because everyone's got their own style, and collecting witnesses ain't mine. And so he heads off to do things his own way. But other characters show up to help out. And Irie's there, and Higashide is there. Irie's friend is also there. Tento's friend, who had a crush on Irie, whose name I've forgotten, is there. What? 3 for 4? 3 for 4.
That's pretty good, Nick. I'd be like, Idol Girl, Sasuke Kid, dude from Model Idol right Case.
That's the only reason I remember them. My shame. So, we also cut to... I forget his name. The victim in the case. Tanaka, that's his name. And he's like, oh, I've got my backup white powder. What am I gonna do? You know, I've only got it for emergencies. But what if I start to suffer withdrawal symptoms? I'm going to have to take it. And am I going to live in the grip of this white powder specter? Okay. So, after everyone's finished sending a brochure sent to us, thanks to them all, and everyone says, like, you know, and Higashida says, it's, you know, my thanks for the cheating case, and Iris says, we care about, you know, Miss Shiratori. And Pine criticizes Ibaka for not coming along, but Tento says, you know, Inugami isn't always upfront, but he is fundamentally a tsundere type. He's kind-hearted under that gruff exterior. Has there, like, been any other cases in the official Jump translations that they actually use, like, the term tsundere?
In this series, or yeah, series general?
But no, like, actual references to it. Because they've made a fair number of references in just the last two chapters with this one, and I don't seem to recall them actually, you know, talking that way.
No, but I guess maybe this is just them saying, like, you've kind of seen what he is, we'll just, you know, bluntly say that's what he...
We can explain it, yeah. And then you'll know where it's okay. Well, especially because they've used the term Ronbo a whole fucking ton. So, anyway, you know, Tento says, like, you know, if there's a child in need, then attorney Inugami won't ignore him or her. I bet even now, as we speak, he's racking his brains to find evidence for his counterattack to Ronpa the true perp and save Miss Shiratori, and he'll definitely win in the end. And then Pine goes, that means I'm going to lose, fuck you. And Tento's like, but didn't you want to lose this time? And then you see someone else is going, ha 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 ha.
I like to think that's also fucking Tonto, like he's insane.
Didn't you want to lose this time?
He just does the fucking Joker laugh. Everyone's like, I really hate this ladybug kid.
I do like the note that Tonto says as he actually is launching into his whole thing, where he says, you know, if all that Ibaka wanted to do was just lodge the hell out of people, then he could have just been a prosecutor too, but he chose to be an attorney so he could actually help people and defend the innocent and so on. So
that's like that. Actually a big thing. I was going to mention this at the end of the chapter, but this is easily my favorite chapter of Gakkyo Hotei yet, because we actually kind of get some real kind of character development to these people. You know, we get this little inside look at what's his name? Inugami. You know, with the notion of, like, you know, he chose to be an attorney because he wants to protect people. He wants to help people. He's going to, you know, go out of his way for people in need. But I also like that at the start of the chapter, we saw that Pine isn't just this vindictive prosecutor either. You know, she does have friends. She has a heart, and, you know, that one of the best aspects of the Ace Attorney series was that a lot of the prosecutors you would meet throughout the series, you'd eventually befriend, and you know, they work together to face them.
Unless they were Karma.
Yeah, unless you're Von Karma, in which case you have a heart attack and die or something. I forget exactly what happens to him. But, like, the biggest moments of the series have always been when the two sides work together to find the truth. Like, that was the big moment in the most recent game. It was just like, you know, the prosecutor diligently goes through every fact to make sure that nothing, you know, gets missed, and the defense is there to trust their client till the very end, and when those two sides work together, then you find the truth. Like, it's that nerdy, like, ridiculous shonen kind of mentality, but it's
right.
Cool to be seen it's here.
Showing the law system the way that it's actually supposed to work.
Yeah, like, that both of these people are respectable people. You know, you may have been thinking Pine's just this goofy idiot all this time, but she has actual feelings and emotions and morals.
So, at the same time as Tento is kind of going on this whole thing, like, you know, he's going to, you know, find the true perp, we see Ibaku sitting on a swing somewhere, and he's muttering to himself, and after Tento finishes up, we see kind of inside his head, he's going through all of the evidence that they know about so far, and he comes to realization and gets a very predatory smirk on his face as he realizes what's going on. And now, the day of classroom arbitration. So, they've gathered up some weird fucking witnesses for this one, haven't they? What the fuck is wrong with this tennis kid? Jesus Christ.
It's kind of weird, because he vaguely reminds me of a character from Ace Attorney.
Yeah, like the otaku kid, right?
No, I was actually thinking the most recent game, there was a pottery maker. There was a school for lawyers, and one of the members of it was this hyper-crazy, hyperactive boy called Robin. Like, he had, like, fucking muscle straps to him, like constantly like, stretching and, you know, working out, and it was just crazy hyperactive. So I just see this kid with like the baseball cap, the same kind of hair, and like waving his hand. I just kind of get the same idea.
It's those eyebrows that freak me out, and that manic smirk, that manic grin, rather. So I had the bit of the square off and stuff, and then Tenta says, "Hey, Inugami, why did you pick those three random guys out of the bunch we gathered?" And Doaku says, "Actually, I'm willing to bet one of them is the masked dude." What? So, Pine opens up by saying, he's like, you know, "The accused was at the Phys Ed storehouse, the transaction site, on the date and time indicated in the email sent to the other accused, Tanaka." And she starts to, Shiratori starts to tear up over this accusation, and Pine kind of like reaches out to her and thinks to herself, "I'm so sorry. This too is the pretty prosecutor's fate." So Ibaka starts calling up his witnesses. We open with the weird athletic kid, Matsuoka, who is a phys ed committee member, and he's just fanning himself, and he's just like, "Isn't it hot in here?" "No, you weirdo. You're obviously on drugs. I mean, tasty sugar shit." Happy powder or whatever it's called. Anyway, so he says, "I'm sure that you go to the Phys Ed storehouse a lot as a member of the committee, so do you know anything about this?" And he says, "Well, I don't know much about the mask, dude, but I have heard rumors about a poltergeist inside the Phys Ed storehouse. You'll suddenly hear clattering. Or is it rustling? It sounds like something moved. And of course, no one's there when you look. Well, a sketchy powder was being dealt there. Maybe I had auditory hallucinations from the influence. Ha 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 ha. How about
you?" I'm joking.
"I'm joking. Do you really think I'd give into such illusions?" "Yeah, go away."
You're like, "Alright, that was enough of you, crazy man."
Habaku's like, I'm really not good with these guys.
I guess he's getting off. He's just like, "Hey, Taka, you eating meals properly?" Starts punching him in the fucking arm. This dude's fucking gaunt, looks like a goddamn corpse. He's just like, "Whap, whap, whap, hey, alright, cool, whap, 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 aren't you eating?"
"This guy right here, this motherfucker."
He's like, "You know you're in court, right?" "I can see the assault."
The accused Matsuoka will not be brought up on charges of assault. "What the fuck are you talking about? Come on, we're just messing around, why, Tanaka? Ha ha ha, punch, punch, punch."
"Come on, Judge, stop being such a stick in the mud, whap, whap, whap." Like, oh, Matsuoka, what a bad decision that was.
The most unfortunate witness. So the next witness is Kuroda, this tall, kind of lean guy who is constantly sneezing and snorting and is disgusting. He's like, "Don't you think it's kind of dusty in here?" "No, you're obviously also on drugs. I mean, happy powder." So Baku says, "I hear you purchased from the masked dude once." "Yes, about a month ago." "Statute of limitations passed, right?" He's like, "Yeah, okay, fine." And just like, "Well, that's pretty quick." Covered his ass pretty fast, didn't he? So Abaku says, "In exchange, you should tell us about the masked dude." "Okay. Well, just like his name implies, the masked dude wore what looked like a wrestling mask, an orange one. Plus, he hid his face further with a regular face mask, like for a cold over that. His school uniform was pretty baggy, both top and bottom, like he borrowed his older brother's." And Tendo goes, "I swear Tanaka said the mask was red in his statement, because no one could possibly own two luchador masks." So Ibaka says, "So he wore a face, like a surgical mask over his wrestling mask?" "Yeah, it was kind of tanky. Or, did I say tanky? Tacky.
It was kind of tanky.
I've got League of Legends.
It's like, it reminded me a lot of fucking Fury, that movie about the tank. It was really tanky."
"Apparently he used to only wear one mask, but I guess he wanted to hide his mouth, too." And Tedda says, "Alright, well, that matches what Tanaka said." Ibaka says, "Oh, and where and at what time did your deal go down?" "It was the Phys Ed storehouse at 5 p.m. "Okay, thank you." And then the last witness is Akanishi, who is chewing on something. He's like, "Don't you guys think it's kind of stuffy in here? What is wrong with all of you? Perfectly temperate conditions." And you're just like, "Oh, it's not perfectly ideal. Jesus Christ."
"We don't know, Nick. Maybe it's a little bit chilly in the room. Maybe if we can get a shot of Pine, see if her nipples are poking out or something like that. It wouldn't be shocking for this series, considering.
That is probably not asking for too much, yeah. Considering everything. So Ivanka says, you know, you've been chewing on something and it's really distracting. What are you chewing on? It's a rubber band. Yeah, I tend to hyperventilate at times, and this helps to abate that, you know, if I chew on a rubber band. You know, gum is the best, but we're not allowed to bring snacks, so I chew on this rubber band, and I got the teacher's permission and stuff, and he's like, okay, fine, whatever. I hear you bought powder from the masked dude once, back around April. Well, he somehow found out about my rubber band habit, and he emailed me. I was a little scared, so I brought a friend with me to the deal at 5 p.m. in the Phys Ed storehouse. 5 in the evening in the Phys Ed storehouse, that's the only thing that is the same, no matter who you ask, says Tento, as he scribbles notes, pointlessly, because Ivanka already knows who did it. Right. So Ivanka says, so the masked dude was there. Yes, except back then, he was only wearing one mask, and I feel like its color was red, not orange. Which means you saw the mask through his mouth, right? How does it compare to that woman's? And Akinichi's like, I don't know. I didn't think that they were female, but like the other guy said, he was hiding his shape with a baggy school uniform, so I don't know. Sorry. So Tenta says, but the rest of their statements, like the mask color, orange versus red, clash, what's going on? Could there be two masked dudes? Or dot, dot, dot. I don't know. So Ivanka says, all right, three important witness statements have been heard. Akinichi is tall for a fourth grader, so it may seem difficult to figure the masked dude based on physique or voice. However, one of them made a clearly sketchy statement. The hint lies in the reason why Miss Shiratori was in the Phys Ed storehouse and why she insists on continuing to maintain her silence. I believe that once we have those answers, which one of these three is the masked dude will naturally become evident. If any of you have solved this mystery, please join me in shouting out who. Well then, everyone, see you next week. Bye. So this is our first three-chapter case, I guess.
Yes. Yes, it is. Which is, it's good. The extra time kind of makes things a bit more interesting.
Right.
All right, Nick, who is it?
I think it's Matsuoka, because his face looks all weird, his mouth is very recognizable, and he looks incredibly nervous with the sweat and stuff. Also, he seems like he's on drugs. So.
That'd be great if you were just like, he looks sketchy.
I don't like the way he looks. Like, no one wears a visor these days.
Yeah. Nick, I think that legally you have to provide more than that. Nope, he's sketchy looking. That's why he did it.
No one carries around a tennis racket without putting it in his case. Obviously, he uses that case to carry drugs around. Okay.
I don't know.
He's short, so the uniform could maybe look baggy on him.
I feel like, and I know I'm horribly wrong, I feel like I need to have read the previous chapter again to remember all the clues, but the logic I'm going with here is that it's the second guy, Kuroda.
The snotty guy.
Yeah, my logic being is that there are two masked people, and what's her name? The defendant in this case.
Shiratori.
Yeah, Shiratori. She is one of them. But she was actually posing as the masked man to give out something that would be used as a fake drug.
That's the special thing that the Tanaka said that helped it go down easier.
Yeah, just basically she acts like she's selling drugs. What she's trying to do is give them something that helps. The only reason why, and I think I may be misreading the clues or something like that, but they note that there was a thing, like 2 days from now at 5 p.m. at the Phys Ed storehouse, but then there's another one that says at 6 p.m. tomorrow at the Phys Ed storehouse. And my logic being is that all of these three guys have all said that they met at 5 o'clock, but the only detail that changes is that the second guy said, was an orange mask. So I'm thinking that he, you know, got that mistake wrong, or he saw the wrong mask, something like that.
But, it's a conspiracy.
Yeah. And we also know that one of them, you see that their mouth is covered, and the one it's not. So I'm imagining the one with the mouth covered is what Shiratori is. But I know I'm off base on this. I'm getting the details of it wrong, but that's the logic I'm going with. But yeah, I really like this chapter this week. I thought this was the best Gakkyo Hotai has been, and I hope we continue on this track.
Okay, so, what's next?
Well, we just wanted to briefly mention that My Hero Academia is now in Shonen Jump. they did the first chapter this week. And then next week we will just immediately jump to where the series is currently in Japan. We'll be date and date with it. And there'll be like a chapter basically to catch people up. And I just want to note, I read the chapter again this week, and then that was probably a big reason why this week felt so dense, because then I was reading a 40-page series that's pretty dialogue-heavy to begin with. But I really fucking enjoyed reading the
translated version.
Yeah. I don't know why. Maybe I was tired when I read it the first time, but it hooked me so much more emotionally reading it the second time through. Like, just the conversations he has with his mom, or... You know, when he sees his friend being attacked by the goop monster, and he's like, you know, when he first hears that it's happening to the crowd, the first thought he has is like, oh, that's awful. I know what that pain's like. But then the moment he sees the face, it's just that the next shot is him running out to go save. Like, I don't know why. It caught me in, like, such a fucking strong manner this time around. I absolutely loved it.
Okay.
Really dug it. That's One
Piece. Yeah, I'm looking forward to having that be part of our regular recap, because it is a good series. So. Did you happen to read Nisekoi this week?
I actually did. This
is actually a pretty damn good chapter, I think.
It's like the first time I think I'd actually stopped to read Nisekoi in about like 4 months. I briefly stopped last week when there was a panel of fucking Chitoge, like, bound up in the air with rope and, like, having arrows fired at her, and I was like, I wonder why this is happening, but it was, like, a momentary thing before I just kept clicking pages. Right. I'm like, I'm sure it'll happen, you know, I'll get my explanation next week, because they're in some kind of weird archery competition.
Right. Basically, they're at some shrine that is rumored to have, like, this high success rate of, you know, you do a certain thing, and you're guaranteed to, you know, get your fated person, your fated romantic partner, basically. Mm-hmm. And so their thing that they're doing is, if you shoot your loved one with this special type of arrow, with this bizarrely heart-shaped arrowhead, then you'll be together forever. So all of each of Raku's crushes are trying to shoot him with arrows, and he has no idea what the fuck is going on, because Harem Protagonist gotta be ignorant to all the people who are interested in him, right? So, all the girls are, you know, shooting him with arrows and stuff, but then Shun, like, jumps in the way of the arrows, and so he's like, instead they'll fall in love with me! But then Ruri snatches the arrows out of the air, like, fucking barehanded in one hand, and she's like, and so Shun is like, what are you doing? And she says, you asshole, and she threatens to stab him with the arrows, and she realizes what's going to happen, so instead she picks up a rock and hits him with that. Because Ruri am smart. But then the, like, shrine man comes up and says, oh my gosh, that stone you used is the only black stone on the temple grounds, and when a woman hits this man with that stone, it's a love charm 10 times stronger than the arrows. And she's like, god fucking damn it. And she breaks the stone in her hand by crushing it. And we have some whole thing where, like, each of the girls are trying to shoot Rocco. And Marika's assistant, whose name I can never remember, is confronting Tsugumi about why she's picked up the bow and arrow instead of using her holdout pistol to hold her off. And she's like, I'm definitely not trying to shoot the guy that I definitely don't have a crush on. Leave me alone. And in a weird sequence, Chitoge's bow snaps, so she instead hurls the arrow like a javelin.
That was pretty awesome.
And it bounces all the other arrows away and stabs Raku right in the back. And so it's like, hey, I did it. And so then the shrine man's like, okay, come on, everyone. Just, you know, pick up your arrows and return them to me. By the way, you owe me for breaking that bow. And then Marika's just thinking to herself, you know, she never said that it had to be the first arrow that hit him. So she goes up a point-blank range and shoots Raku in the back. And then
all the other girls do it.
And then Tsugumi stabs him, and then Onodera pokes him.
And she's like, sorry, Flint.
He's just going, ow! Ow! So then all the girls go their separate ways, and Chitoge comes up to Raku, and he's like, are you okay? No, I'm losing blood. I wish that were it. So, they kind of go off, and they have this moment where they're trying to bond, and Chitoge is like, oh, I've done the love ritual, and now I can maybe try and be a bit more confident with her. And Raku's like, why is she acting all different? And why is she smiling so much? And it's freaking me out because human intimacy scares me. And then just as Chidoke seems like she's finally going to confess to him, her phone rings and she gets cut off and he's like, oh, it's my dad. And Raku says, it's important. It might be important. You should take it. So he thinks to himself, what came over her? Why is she acting so weird? It's almost as if... And then she goes, what? And she comes back over and says, he says you and I no longer have to be a false couple. Dun, dun, dun. Plot progression for once in 100 chapters.
Or is it?
Yeah, really. It'll be like 3 chapters of freak out and then back to the status quo.
Yeah.
I don't know. It was a pretty amusing chapter overall, and you know, it was like, oh, maybe something will actually happen now instead of going in circles for eternity, like always. And yeah. So,
Nick, let's good. Talk about One Piece.
It just seemed like a notable chapter for once. So yeah, One Piece.
I just want to talk about One Piece a lot.
One Piece biker gang. As in on bicycles, biker gang.
Yeah, I thought that was weird. Like, they're like motorcycles.
With a sidecar on the bicycle.
Like, I thought they were motorcycles at first until I saw Usopp was, like, very calmly riding one with Chopper in a basket. I was like, oh, they're bikes. And I think Brooke's riding a unicycle.
No, it's one of those,
like, oh, that it's old-timey.
Yeah. So, like, over on one side, Franky and Luffy and Zoro are in leather jackets and leather pants. And it's like, yeah, we're looking all badass. And Zoro's stuffed in this shark-designed sidecar. And then you look over and it's like, Usopp's got the girls on the back of his and Chopper in a basket. And Brooke is up enjoying a cup of coffee and stuff. It's just like, this is very bizarre. It seems like everyone should be acting like they are on the one half instead of like total badasses on the other. Like, Zoro, how are you trying to look badass? Your legs are like going to go rigor or something like that. Anyway. Chapter 775. To Russian with love. So we open up with Mansherry being like, oh, Leo, you saved me. And Leo's like, why are you being so selfish and stuff? And she's like, carry me on your back or in your arms. No, you're being selfish. Then I'm not going to escape. Oh, you're so fickle. And what's his name? Beetle Knight is like, just carry her. We're trying to get out of here, you ignorant idiot who doesn't realize that she's like got it hard for you. Also, Giola is there. She's like, oh, I am undone. The situation is dire. I must report to the young master. He suspects that the ultimate feature of the heal fruit is a restorative ability that sacrifices the lifespan of the user. That way, if anything should happen to the Smile Factory, he can still restore it to its original state. The factory is in peril.
It would have been great. It's like Bleach chapter. We cut there, do something else for 18 pages, then come back to it, the last panel, finish the sentence, the factory's a barrel pie.
You are our last line of defense, Senor Pink. So, cut to Senor Pink versus Franky.
Nick! It's Franky versus Senor Pink!
And it's so manly! And all the girls are like, oh, watch out, Senor! As Franky rears back and punches him across the face as Senor Pink just, like, stands there with his arms crossed and beats him into the ground. And they're like, oh my god, no, Fraland, watch out for the attack from below again, dodge! And so he uses a meow meow suplex again, and Frank is like, ow! And they're like, oh my god, they're both at their limit, why aren't you dodging their attacks? And Frankie's like, shut up, Tantadas! This is a fight between men. When you're offered drinks at the bar, a man doesn't take his glass off the table. Listen, this guy's a real man, so I gotta not bother with dodging his attacks. I'll take everything he's got and still win with my strong style.
You're such a cool dude there, Franky. You're so hard-boiled.
So Franky says, like, you know, I know you're worried, but you just stand back and watch me win. I ain't gonna let you go back into slavery. So Senior Pink is like, ha, that's just got me tipsier than any dive bar I've ever been in, kid. Well, don't forget what you just said. I ain't a spring chicken no more, so the next move's gotta settle this. And so the girls are like, no, someone has to point out how far away you are. Senor, you're too far away!
I do like that, like, the shot, like, it's just a little speck on the screen of Cinder Pink, but they're still having, like, the dialogue as though this with, like, the intense stare down.
20 feet away from each other as opposed to 200
feet. Just say a subject, just like, you're really far away.
So Cinder Pink rushes in and he says, just remember what you said, and if a man never goes back on his word, then let's see you survive this one! And he charges Frankie and takes him into a building, and charges him all the way up the side of the building, and he says, if you should happen to get back to your feet, then I lose. I'll take your final attack with everything I've got. And Frankie grins and says, you're on. And they dive all the way up the side of the building and shoot up through the top as he just German suplexes the bejesus out of him.
Like a thousand stories. Not a thousand, but a lot of stories.
And so as they're coming down, Senior Pink says, if I could just keep flying, I could see Russian again. Frankie's like, Russian? Yeah, I also got a son named Gimlet, but it's too bad I got gravity to deal with. Wait, what are you talking about? Your back's still flesh and blood, right, Cyborg? Huh? You knew that? Well, you better shut up or else you'll bite your tongue. And he suplexes him with his baby buster.
Meow, meow, suplex, baby buster!
But then Frankie still staggers to his feet, wheezing, and his sunglasses have fallen off, and like one of his robotic eyes is exposed, and Senor Ping just crosses his arms and stands there and says, I lose. And he starts to have a flashback as Frankie goes like full like JoJo's Bizarre Adventure on him. Oh, just punching him over and over and over again, and as he's being punched, Senor Ping just says, now I remember. The first day I met you, and the day you stopped smiling were dark nights under a hail of rain like this. Like the hail of punches?
Of course, Nick. That's what a man does.
So he, like, went out with this girl named Russian, and she told him, what do I hate? Pirates. I hate her to death. So, what do you do? Oh, I work at a bank.
Thing. A bank thing. That's a thing, right?
Oh, you're a bank employee. Next page, they're married.
But, Nick, the frames are black. Yeah. That means something bad and sad is going to happen.
Right. So, they have a kid. It's like, what's his name going to be? I know. No, rather, Senor Pink. I know. Gimlet. Oh, what a lovely name. Meanwhile, going out with the pirates, shooting stuff up, making money.
Ah, shit, baby's dead.
Where were you?
It's like Gimlet's dead. It's like that fucking Nationwide commercial. He just comes home and the bathtub's filled up with water. She's
I'll
like,
never get to meet my father because I died.
Because the television fucking fell on me.
Exactly a week ago, the day you just disappeared, he came down with a sudden fever and we rushed to the hospital, but it was too late. Oh, Gimlet, you liar. I called the bank over and over. They said you didn't work there. What is your real job? Where did your money come from? You don't have the right to be a father. How dare you treat me like a fool?
Oh, Nick, the Foley expert.
Wait, Russian, it's too stormy out. You can't go. Stop following me. No, you don't understand, Russian. The reason I can't tell you the truth is, where are you? Oh, I'm afraid your wife was trapped under a landslide during the storm. Her condition is very poor. She's in a vegetative state. She's unresponsive. At this rate, she may never show any kind of emotion again. It's just a question of how long she's got left to live, and she's making pure, like, blank-eyed stare expression. Was staring straight again, ahead, unblinking. So Senor Pink freaks out, and he starts to cry. He's like, oh, I lied to you because I didn't want to lose you. I want to hear your answers. I want to hear your voice. I want to see your smile one more time. Look, Russian, I found Kim's baby bonnet. Don't I look like him? And it works! he immediately realized, oh, God, no, it was a bad joke. I better not let anyone see me like this. Oh, my God, she smiled. I shall dedicate my life to dressing up like my dead baby son and wear his bonnet and a diaper and put a sucker in my mouth and just walk around dressed like a baby, and people will laugh at me, but it won't matter And people were thinking to themselves, like, oh, his wife was in an accident. Anyone would lose their mind after that. And Diamante and Treble came up to him. It's like, oh, what the fuck happened to you? You're fast and sense. And everyone's like, oh, he's so weird. He's a pervert. But Senor Ping just thinks to himself, this outfit is worth more than the finest suit to me, Russian, because the only time you smile for me is when I wear these clothes. In the back of the press, he gets punched out, goes flying, he loses.
But then, he's laying on the ground, Nick, and Frankie says, what are you thinking back on? As you cry, brother. And he wipes his tears off, and he's like, if we ever should cross paths again, let's share some drinks and you can tell me about the woman named Russian.
Winner of the Smile Factory battle, Frankie.
Such a fucking cool moment. Oh, God, what a cool chapter.
This, like, is something that could only happen in One Piece, basically.
Yeah, like, normally this would be something I could play about. Like, oh, yeah, we get this guy's entire sad flashback in one chapter, but...
like, 5 pages, yeah.
Yeah, like, but this actually made a lot of sense because the entire time we were like, huh, we saw that flashback. He looked weird there. Why is he dressed like a fucking baby now? And this chapter clearly went to show that that was something Oda initially had planned for a while now, so... I liked it. This chapter was also just... It was fun, you know, the notion of Frankie and Senor Pink just having this manly respect for one another of, like, I believe I can beat you, so I won't even bother dodging your attacks because that's, you know, how much I respect you or whatever. I'll take everything you have and still beat you. And, you know, the final, you know, hail down coming with the Frankie iron boxing and all that. I just thought it was really fucking well done. Like... I think in my mind I wanted to get like a 2-chapter thing of them just having this insane fight, but I think if you go back throughout the past couple months, you probably can get enough little snippets of their battle to basically make one of those. This probably might be something that'll be even more enjoyable when like the anime gets to it and you can kind of like cut into those pieces, make AMVs out of it or something like that. But I really dug it. I like this chapter a lot. It had some good emotions to it. I like the little ending there, like, what are you thinking back as you cry on my brother? It's just a cool Frankie line.
I do like that, you know, some of the members of, you know, the Don Quixote family are getting these little flashbacks. And like, you know, this character has this story, and this is why they're this way, and so on and so forth. And not the ones that are just like Dellinger or some shit, but the ones that actually do really stand out against the rest of the crowd. You know, it's like, I don't need to hear, like, Gladius's weird backstory. It's like, whatever, he dresses in a leather coat or something like that. It was like, Senor Pink, though, he's actually had, like, interaction with Frankie alongside this, you know, bizarre dressing habit of his and stuff. So, you know, the ones that have the, like, more interesting personalities get these interesting backstories, too.
Yeah, I felt like we got a good fight out of this. We got a good backstory, a, you know, interesting character. I like the little, you know, moment Frankie shared with him. I've heard some people say that they thought the name was mistranslated, that Russian should be translated as Lucy Ann. But I think Russian was intentional, because I'm getting strong James Bond vibes from all of this. Not just the From Russian with Love, though, if that is the direct name, then it very obviously should be Russian. But sometimes I think Jump does do puns, because I can't imagine all those Stealth Symphony chapters really were called that. Like fucking Dragon Breeze Evolution or whatever it was. But just beyond that, Gimlet being named, you know, after a Russian, not a Russian drink, but a drink that's heavily influenced by vodka, and the fact that Baby, or Senor Pink himself kind of looked like a James Bond-esque spy, I just get the idea that that's what they were going with, and that's why, you know, her name's actually Russian.
Okay, so do we have 7 Deadly Sins this week?
No, it's like the first time in a month you've asked me, and it's the one time no 7 Deadly Sins this week. I don't know why, just I guess it wasn't in the magazine. I'm not honestly that broken up about it, to be fair. I'm not crazy on 7 Deadly Sins recently.
Toriko, Gourmet 310, gong. So... the parade of apes and stuff have arrived for some reason, and Kaka says, it's the festival! If they were able to reach the summit of 100G Mountain, that means they're all masters of monkey martial arts. And Toriko says, When you say festival, oh, festival, once every several hundred years, what a coincidence. The Masters of Monkey Martial Arts challenge the Monkey King. Whoever beats the Monkey King earns the right to assume that mantle and become one of the 8 Beast Kings. At first, it was a festival to showcase monkey martial arts, but the desire to earn the title of one of the 8 Kings has turned it into a serious competition for defeating the Monkey King. And Kaga says, yes, it's the Monkey Festival, or Monfest for short. They're all apes. They can't actually say these things. You're making this shit up as you go along. So, Toriga says, wait, so a serious competition. Didn't the Monkey King only want a playmate? And so Kaga says, well, of course it's only fun and games to the Monkey King, but that doesn't mean he or you won't enter the ring with an intent to kill. And everyone starts to freak out for a little bit. But Kaga says the fighting style changes with every Monfest. The ring has been everything from monkey sumo to monkey boxing. This year is pro wrestling, monkey wrestling.
In the distance, you just hear Infamous Planet screaming as he knows a series of wrestling references are coming.
So yeah, it's monkey wrestling time, and Coco is like, on my knees, and he stumbles over, and he's on his hands and knees, and Toriyama's like, the Monkey King. He's injured, and so the narration says, he had only tapped Coco's knees a little, but Coco couldn't stand up, even though he had managed to mostly dodge the Monkey King's prank. The damage he took was serious.
I thought it was just like the dumb narrator who's like, Coco was hurt. He hurt bad, guys. I thought it was fucking Grandma fucking Arena over there like, hey, guys! Like, Coco's totally broken his knees.
Alice,
whatever. Yeah, Alice.
So, Toriga says, oh, not to mention, we're at the summit of 100G Mountain. Just diverting gravity is taking a toll on our physical strength, and we've barely slept these past 3 days while training in monkey martial arts. Sure, we recovered a little by eating the BB pill bugs we juggled, but still, unlike the Monkey King, who was fully rusted and energetic, Toriko and his team's strength was only at about half its peak. And so Toriko's just thinking to himself, we don't even have the time or strength to play. Well, why didn't you bother showing up then? You could just slept for like one day and then showed up. Fucking guys.
Don't worry, Nick. The Monkey King's balls have fucking magic healing powers.
Right, so it's like, I've got to snatch his balls. And the Monkey King grins, he backflips into the ring, and his balls shimmer, and his magical ball sweat goes spraying everywhere, wafting over everyone. It's like, oh, it's rejuvenating me. Thank God for his balls odor. This is such a weird story arc. And Demon Coco stands up and is like, I'm fine. And it's a delicious sound. I've never gotten a full stomach on sound alone before. His balls are making sounds, Chris!
Well, they know it. They're like, the Monkey King's pair of balls are also known as a pair of bells!
So when his balls clap together, they sound like bells jingling. This is fucking weird.
Yeah, it's, you know, his fucking balls jingle together. It makes
no wonder all these series that people thought would never get in Shonen Jump are showing up in Shonen Jump. And we got magic balls in your face. Every chapter of Toriko. So everyone's like, okay, let's fight. And Zebra says, my throat is itching to see some action. If his sounds heal, mine destroy. Thanks. Toriko goes over to the pets and he's like, watch over Komatsu. Bambina is unmistakably a member of the 8 Kings. He is a monster who for generations has engaged in fierce battle against the Wolf King, Bird King, and Snake King. I'm sure as their descendants, you want to challenge him as a rival, but this one's our fight. So stay over here and don't help us save our friend's life.
Nick, I got a little bit of a Barack Obama out of you on that.
Oh, the way I... Like,
just a little bit. Like, if you try actually going for it.
Let me be clear. I do not want your help on this battle. Because the time will come when you will get to challenge him.
Nailed it.
Don't ask me to do that again.
Obama Toriko.
I'm not doing that as Toriko's voice. Toriko shows up too often.
Don't worry, Nick. I'll do Coco in my sweet Terrence Howard impersonation.
So, Kaka says, Toriko, let me explain the rules and tell you something. But the bell rings. The timekeeper's just like, fuck this. No more pre-match. The promos are done. Get in the ring. Wrestle, you motherfuckers. So, Sonny is like, let's go do this. We'll show this ape how different we are from 3 days ago. And Bambi looks at them. And he's like, who are you guys again? He spins around like a Tasmanian devil and he makes himself dizzy because he is wacky and fun loving. So they're like, okay, the rules are different from usual pro wrestling. There's no falling, tapping out, or getting ejected out of the ring. It means it's not wrestling! There's no ref either. There's no ref stops. This is just fighting.
We use turnbuckles and stuff.
It is basically last man standing, but without a ref to make the last man standing count. Jesus. What was the point of building up as... There is a ring. That is the one resemblance to pro wrestling that there is. So, Zebra's like, okay, I'll go first. And Sonny's like, no. I'll go first, because I've been so angry at myself being scared and shutting my eyes because I was afraid of his power. I want to punch my old self and him. And I can't punch my old self because we don't have a DeLorean. So let's just punch him. So they're like, okay, Sonny, you go fight Bambina one-on-one. And immediately after Sonny just gets whipped into the ropes and starts to rebound, Zebra just gets in the ring and just like, no rules.
Soccer, I'm a heel.
I'll go first. Okay. Interfere within 5 seconds. All right.
God damn it, Zebra.
Full Nelson, let me hold him in place for this sweet rebound off the ropes. Superman punch to the chest, and Bambi is just like, Jesus Christ, my heart. And that's the end of the chapter. Well, okay then.
I completely forgot this chapter. Like, I've read it twice. But this, like, it was the end of Jump this week, and there were so many chapters that were so dense with dialogue that by the time I got to this chapter...
Jump, Rosario to Vampire was the end of the chapter.
It was the end of Jump I actually paid attention to. And when it came, I don't know why, I like, was reading through it, my mind fucking blanked out on so much of it. So even as you're reading, I was like, oh yeah, I forgot that happened. All right, fucking monkey wrestling. Oh yeah, Torka lost his arm.
Yeah, wait. When did that happen? Didn't he win that arm wrestling?
Oh, man. It was a chapter of Toriko. It was such a weird chapter, but almost enjoyable in how goofy it is.
It's pro wrestling, except it's not pro wrestling. Because there's no way to get disqualified like in pro wrestling. There's no way to get counted out like in pro wrestling. There's no submissions. There's no pinfalls. You basically just punch him until he gets knocked out. Like boxing. No, boxing was last time.
No, boxing has gloves. we put some steel chairs under the ring this time.
So like mixed martial arts. No, that also has submissions. So like bare knuckle brawling? No, like wrestling. God. So weird. I'm so disappointed as soon as you do all that. You just imagine like Bambino, like, being really adamant about the rules. Like, puts, like, Toriko in some, like, gonna-break-your-neck hold, but Toriko's foot happens to touch the ropes, and Bambino just lets him go, because wrestling. It's like, no, it is wrestling, but without the things that make wrestling wrestling, except Bambino wanted to do a lariat. He didn't do it, he wanted to.
That'll be it. There'll be a suplex and a pile driver at some point, and that'll be how this is monkey pro wrestling.
Fucking Mucha Lucha more closely resembles pro wrestling than this.
They turned into washing machines in that.
And a bulldozer.
Oh, yeah. Man.
That was a weird and phenomenally racist show. Anyway.
That's so... Snoopy! Snoopy!
All he said was Snoopy. The fuck was that?
It's so adorable, but they kept hurting him.
What was it? Ricochet, Buena Girl,
and the Flea.
The Flea, who had the most racist voice.
It's me, the Flea. It's like we couldn't just make him Hispanic. We had to make him poor stupid and Hispanic.
Like, the most blatant, like, trying to be Cheech and Martin. What the fuck else was there? Like, Potato Potato Jr.? That was a weird goddamn show. He turned into a pinball! Anyway. World Trigger. Chapter 91. Tamakoan 2, Part 6. So, last time, Hisato had, like, had Yuma in a full-on, full Nelson Homan place, had impaled himself with swords so that Yuma could not escape the hold. So it was like, alright, good job, I'll blow him away. But at that moment, Chica gets notified and shoots her sniper rifle and blows through a whole bunch of houses and blows all the competitors into the sky. Yuma gets blasted free of the hold and cuts down Hisato, and he has to bail out immediately. And so it's like, oh no, she doesn't even need a line of sight in order to blast him away. But Amatori takes the shot as soon as Chica gets... Not Amatori. Ayukawa? Fuck. Arafune. I got it eventually. Okay. Arafune shoots a sniper rifle and manages to hit Chica immediately because she's exposed her position. And so he's like, sorry, kid. And Sua continues to try and blast Yuma, but he can't position himself properly because one of his legs has been blown out. So Yuma jumps around trying to cut him down, and Sua thinks to himself, thanks for the heads up, I'm, you know, exposing that technique of his. So he manages to twist just in time as Yuma is forced to land on the ground. He's like, oh, he's gonna get him, he's gonna blow him away. But then Osamu takes his chance, blasts him with his meteor, and blows Sua out of the way. As Yuma just manages to get a shield up to protect himself. He's got a whole bunch of holes blowing his legs, but he manages to survive the battle. And at that moment, Sua has to bail out, and Arafune, his Trion, is complete leaking out, and so he has to bail out as well. And so that's it. It's victory for Tamakoma 2 as Yuma and Osamu survive, and with an additional 4 takedowns, they get a total of 6 points, while Sua Squad got 1 point, and Arafune got 1 point. And they're like, oh my god, 6 points in their second match ever. They're unstoppable. Were you going to say something?
No.
Okay. They mentioned Arafune, you know, having to bail out because of a Trion leak, but it was Yuma who did the instigating damage, so that was why he got the point for that. So, Arafune Squad kind of meets up afterward, and they're like, well, thanks for keeping us from getting 0 points, I guess.
This is like the most awkward meeting ever. Like, good job with the 1 point. I mean, we all kind of blew it on that one. Sorry, boss.
Meanwhile, in the Sua Squad room, their coordinator is like, these guys got 1 point each, and Sua, you didn't get any. And he's like, shut up! Piss two.
They blew off my goddamn leg. It's back. It was a Trion body. Phantom limb syndrome. You have your leg back!
Shut up.
I missed it, though.
So Tamakoma 2, they're back, and what is the girl's name? I keep on forgetting her name. She shows up so often, I should remember her name now. I think it's like A or something?
Kiori.
Maybe?
No, I just made up a fucking name!
That's like, Kiyone is their axe girl, right?
Konami is the axe
girl. Konami, the axe girl. God, Japanese is hard. Shut up.
No,
so
I completely...
their coordinator, Tamakoma 2's coordinator, is like, I'm so sorry, were you scared? And Chica's like, no, I'm fine. It's just VR, I'm fine. Yeah. But they're like, oh, thanks, you know, you saved my butt. Says Yuma. She's like, yeah, I think you're welcome. Completely nonplussed Chica over here. But, yeah, no big, whatever. Eh. Angle smile. So the announcer is.
I killed a man today!
No, that wasn't real, Chica.
She's like, actually, you didn't.
I died today. No, that was not real either. As far as you know.
Yeah. Maybe I was always dead. Alright, let's.
My son was all freaked out, and he was like, I am so turned on right now. Whoa!
Creepy, dude. What's up with that?
My son was like, I think I want new teammates, actually. All that bonding we did? No, out the window now. You guys are freaking me out.
Holy shit, I'll team up with fucking Double Sniper Dude and What's-Her-Face. Kanata Katora? No, someone else. I want to fucking sink that shit before Rolo T gets too attached to it.
So the announcers start to analyze, basically, in the post-game conference type of thing. They're like, oh, yeah, you know, Tomokoma had this very superior game plan. You know, they had this these nice two parts of their plan. One was to pick apart each opponent's best formation, and second, to use their ace, Kuga, efficiently. And they stuck to those two goals, which led to them getting 6 points. And meanwhile, behind him, Shun is also holding up two fingers like he's saying the point instead. You little shit. You're not actually saying anything. So they kind of recap a bunch of the important points, and they say, it's like, look, you know, Suicide Squad was hurt by Susumu being lost early because their strength is the individual members backing up Sua for concentrated fire. And they were forced to split up and follow everyone on Arafune Squad, and that was part of Tamakoma's plan, to split both teams up and basically divide and conquer and negate their strengths. And so Kuroe, pigtail girl on Yoneya's team, is like, was Tamakoma's strategy really meant to be that way? It just seemed like, you know, that Kyuga guy was super powerful. So instead, Yoneya kind of relates this point over to Kodera, the guy with glasses, and he's like, well, actually, you know, even though Kyuga is tough on a regular stage with even odds, it would have been difficult for Tamakoma to defeat Arafune Squad, because like Azumas explained in his commentary, in long-range combat, experience counts the most. So Tamakoma made sure to pick the, you know, extreme topography and limited ways to win. They forced Suicide Squad to split up, and, you know, they forced them to, you know, be moved a certain way. They used the essence of terrain warfare, and the other two squads were busy reacting, while Tamakoma was always one move ahead. And that's what showed in the point spread. And so Azuma says, well, yeah, like he just said, I've got nothing left to say. And he's like, I'm sorry! And he is just like, ah, ha, ha. I look smart without having to say anything.
Good job, me.
Yeah, I'm awesome. So they update the rankings, and Tamakoma 2 jumps into 8th place. They're in the top of the middle B-rank group. Whatever. Yeah. And so they get put into their next match, which features Suzunari 1 and Nasu, or that's a weird goddamn teammate. Anyway, so they're actually the top ranked team in this match, so it's going to be interesting because they won't be able to just, you know, choose the map that suits them to their advantage. They'll have to react to what their opponents pick. And they say, it's like, ah, and Suzunari 1 and Nasu squads, they each have a front line, a middle, and a rear guard, and the middle agent is the captain. Exactly the same composition as Tamakoma's 2, and Suzunari 1 has the number 4 ranked attacker, Murakami. So, big test coming up for the team, essentially.
Yes, very much so.
That's the end of the chapter.
Good chapter this week. It was kind of the follow-up to what we saw last week, and just sort of the explanation as to how the tactics they employed actually worked. I like that Osamu was the one to actually get the final kill on that. Kind of a cool moment for him. And I like that their strategy was all there. It was actually kind of a cool Osamu chapter if you think about it, because not only did he get the final kill, but this was all his plan, too.
After he spent all that time burning the midnight oil.
Yeah, because they mentioned that, you know, how Scruffy Beefcake wanted to help them. Or Kiyosuke wanted to help them, but Scruffy Beefcake was like, no, they need to learn this.
Karazuma.
Yeah, they need to learn this on their own. So this was a plan they came up with on their own, and they enacted it flawlessly. Well, not totally flawlessly. Chika still got shot, but that actually went to help serve that the captain of the sniper squad is still a capable sniper that he managed to get shot off before he died.
He's like, well, I guess I'll just shoot that girl.
Yep, I'll take this. Free kill.
Yeah, Friendly Squad looked pretty good overall. You know, he's like, okay, I'll just snipe that guy from where I am in the brief second I have.
Yeah. It was very cool. Very cool chapter all the way through.
But that is going to do it for the recap portion. Good stuff again from World Trigger.
Yes.
So, yeah, let's close it out. We want to take any Q&A?
I think we're probably about limit for today, unfortunately.
Okay. And we'll get to it another time. In the meanwhile, thank you everyone for joining us here on twitch.tv/RoloT, where we record the podcast Wednesdays at 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, though sometimes we do need to change it up. So be sure to follow us on Twitter to stay updated on that stuff. He's at RoloT and I'm at YRulerOfTime, and we'll tweet whenever the show is starting. Also, be sure to send us criticism, questions, and suggestions in the comment section, or email them to us. weeklymangarecap@yahoo.com is the address. Special thanks to Steve Mann, our tackle artist. You can check out his work at neuroticfanboy.deviantart.com and idrawboobs.tumblr.com. And he has recently opened up a Patreon, so be sure to check him out on that as well. Also, special thanks to the Infamous Planet, who does those awesome visual editions of our show and puts up with all the times that we make references to things that he has to look up, and, you know, he hates us for that, so, man. Yeah.
He told me that I got the Waka Waka song stuck in his head for having to add that to the one episode, the fucking Shakira song.
Oh.
And okay. I'm bringing it up again, so he has to put it in again, and it gets stuck in his head again.
You don't need to do that. Don't listen to him. Just put up, like, a picture of Beyonce and, like, the title of the song or something like that.
Beyonce didn't do it. It was Shakira.
I don't know why I just said Beyonce. I don't
know. You're racist.
No, I just don't listen to either of their music.
I just want to say you're racist, then.
That's fine, as long as nobody takes you seriously.
No one ever does.
That's a good point. But yeah, I think that's going to do it.
Yeah. Real quick, also, shout-outs to... I don't know why I feel like I'm completely fucking up the lead speak on this one, but XY63R Omega and Ivory Thoughts for giving us reviews on iTunes. It is greatly appreciated, guys.
Yeah.
We're slowly climbing our way up the ladder to overtake like the 12...
Fuck those woodworkers.
The 12 woodworking podcasts that are just tearing us apart.
It's because we're under hobbies, right?
Yeah, we're under the hobby section, so... Right.
Check us out on iTunes, subscribe, leave comments, and check us out also on weeklymangarecap.podbean.com.
Yes. Yes!
Note to self, reserve Podgeam. Alright.
Now, Nick, how hard was it to get through that chapter of Toriko without doing any wrestling references?
Well, I did do a wrestling reference, but it was very subtle and maybe will not require a wrestling picture to be used. So, if Bambina actually starts to use like actual wrestling moves, I am going to call them. But whipped into the ropes, attended to lariat. That's
are you
going to
do them like JR though? You're like, by God, he just broke Zebra in half.
I don't know if I can actually do a good JR. So.
Do you want me to do it? Clearly, I just had an amazing JR impersonation.
Almost, bye, buddy.
Almost as good as my Terrence.
Oh, no, I ended the podcast before I could answer you. Bye.
Almost as good as my Terrence Howard.